Mr. Walton, did you make contact with aliens? Were you taken to another planet, to a mothership? How do they communicate with... Can you tell me what they look like? Can you tell me how many of them there were? Were you given food?
But the teachers are alive. They're not books. They are the very living essences of nature itself.
What a strange person.
Unbelievably powerful supercomputer that's running our reality, and we don't have a clue as to how to operate it.
So when maybe you or somebody else creates an AGI system, and you get to ask her one question. What would that question be?
My phone's gonna die.
What's outside the simulation?
Bless them.
Say in your mind, say to yourself, I am more than my physical body. Because I am more than physical matter, I can perceive that which is greater than the physical world.
From New York, upstate near the Great Lakes, it's Lighting the Void, and I'm your host, Joe Roop. We're live on the Fringe FM, KTLK Digital Broadcasting. And just so everybody knows, if you go to thefringe.fm, that's thefringe.fm, that is now the Fringe FM production services, right? And that's where you can get podcasts and services from myself and also Amanda, who does the artwork and the show artwork and stuff. So we got a lot of cool packages over there if you are interested in podcasting, right? But if you want to go to the rate, there's a button that takes you to the radio station too. And if you want to go to the radio site, it's just fringe.fm, right? So we took advantage of having both of those domains. I got to be honest with you, I've wanted fringe.fm for like 3 or 4 years, but there's this guy that was like, he bought it and he was strong arming me. And finally, I think this year, I think he slipped up and forgot to renew it. And I was like, oh yeah. And so I grabbed it, right? That's basically what happened, you know? And then I was like, well, should we keep thefringe.fm? And I didn't want to renew it. And, so I don't know. We renewed it. So we got both anyways. You don't want to lose a domain name, right? That you've always had. It's like letting a piece of land go. It's a bad move. Anyways, sorry. By the way, the Night Stalker's here with us. What's up, Night Stalker? You here, brother?
What's going on, brother? What's happening? What's going on, everybody?
So last night we were going to have Andy Cooper on.
Doing
so,
things.
Some times got mixed up. And he's going to come back on. But tonight at the 30-minute mark, we're going to have Jonathan Quinton on. And it's going to be a show about sacred geometry, like talking about, like, is there an actual order to the universe? Ooh. I promise you he's going to come on. This guy's going to be here, you know, this tonight.
Nice. Good.
And like, how do our thoughts fit together with the observable world?
This is my kind of show.
Yeah. Sacred geometry. Right. So, you know, we always talk about like how there's like a natural order to things, how things are always, seeming like they play out in a way, like everything seems totally random in the world, right? But literally, I don't think it's random at all. I really don't. I think
no, not at all.
There's like this divine program going on all the time. Do what? What'd you say, Rohan?
Didn't they say that? Literally say that though, didn't they? And the Gnostics are saying that.
The Gnostics, yeah. Yeah, but what did they say about it? I forget.
Hello? Yeah, the Gnostics, they said that the planet was once an aeon. There was like they've shed the corporeal form, got sucked into her own experiment, had to become the planet Earth. And so every single thing that happens, every leaf, the way it's folded, every single thing, she's put it like that. Everything.
There's some weird theories about how it kind of happens with anything in the world. Like if you were to drive like on a highway for like 1,000 years, eventually you'll start passing the same possums and the same like landmarks, because eventually you'll start, the code will start repeating itself.
What?
It's like a weird simulation theory idea. Yeah. Is that even
possible to be tested?
I don't know. I didn't test it, but we can try. I'll start right now if you want.
All right. Hey, by the way, if you want to join the chat room, you can go to thefringe.fm/chatroom. thefringe.fm/chatroom. What are you saying, Rohan? Go ahead, brother.
I was just saying, I remember years ago, I was against memory associations, there was scientists were looking at the speed of light and the expansion in the universe. I remember seeing one TV show where they were saying the edges of the universe are expanding so much faster that they're actually disconnecting from everything else. So eventually it should catch up with itself and come behind us.
Yeah. That's crazy. Oh, man. That's crazy to think about.
I think it's like if you shot yourself. It's like if you shoot yourself on the moon. If you shoot a bullet on the moon, it like if it goes all the way around and then shoots you in the back. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I really don't know. That stuff, I got to take more time to study this stuff. I always just like depend on Night Stalker to do it. It seems like for the past 3 years, all I've talked about is the crap that goes on in my head. Literally, don't talk about articles or anything or, you know, anything that's going on. It's always just the stuff going on in my mind, you know?
Well, that's the most important stuff. That's the stuff that only you can say. Oh my God, it's happening in your head.
4 years of material.
We won't know it.
That's 4 years. Yeah. Dude, I got a ton of material in my mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm literally going through, I promise you guys, some of the hardest stuff I've ever been through in my entire life. You know, but at the same time, like, I think it grows you, you know, it grows everybody when you go through hard stuff.
Eventually.
I've been having this theory the last like year, probably. I don't know if it's based on anything. It's just something that kind of been noticing how like it's probably a bad thing to think about, but you kind of need some kind of negative thing in your life in order for like good stuff to happen. Like if everything's, for me personally, if everything's going too good, I'm kind of just waiting for the shoe to drop. But if I have like some kind of like sore back or some kind of something wrong happening in my life, then other things that I'm not focused on will like kind of flourish, you know? And it almost reminds me of like how back like the like early Christianity, they used to like hurt themselves on purpose. And I wonder if it's kind of based on that, how like, you know what I'm trying to say? That makes sense.
Yeah. Like, well, I think it's a part of that magical formula too. When you you manifest stuff emotionally, but you have to let it go, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to let it go
exactly
for it to manifest. So sometimes if you put your focus on something else, you end up letting these other things go and manifest. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Like if I cut my hand or something like that, if I get like a paper cut or whatever, then I'm focused on that or whatever. And I completely forget about some other ailment or some kind of like fight I had or some kind of like other problem. And it's weird how that happens. Like, so maybe, and for you, like right now, the station seems to be like really bumping right now and really flourishing. So maybe like,
maybe it does seem like it's
your version of it.
Yeah. It seems like things are going good, right? Yeah. Like it's flourishing, but it's also like, you know, because my focus hasn't really been on where it needs to be, that we've been having some technical issues, you know, a lot, but the station's also flourishing because we've had help too, you know, like Barbara came along and helped, and when she got this equipment and this playout system, we really could you know, do things professionally in that manner. And then Amanda came along and helped with like all of the marketing and the media and website stuff, you know. And both people had jobs too while they were helping, by the way. You know, they are, they had their own thing they had to do. And then you came along before that and started helping with content and talked about news and stuff. Then we did this event and, you know, like that helped out too, even though I'm still trying to get that video out. Like I literally bogged down my computer recording that Fringe Fest, by the way. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of like black spots in there I'm trying to fix, you know, before I, you know.
Have you noticed that like, I feel like every, I've heard like 10 different announcements for different virtual conferences since the Fringe Fest. If you've heard that, but there's a bunch there. They're starting to pop off now.
They ain't going to do it.
Like it was fun. It was good stuff.
Yeah, it was fun, right? Like they won't do it the way the Fringe does it. I promise you that. Somebody parties will party harder. Speaking of which, are you going to go up on the, are you going to do the Valentine's Day block thing again this year?
Oh, man. I don't know.
That was
I'm in
rough.
A tough place emotionally. I don't know. Yeah, I'm like a raw nerve this year. I don't know if I can handle it.
What about
I'm down to chat? If
you know,
we'll see what happens. But
do you think I should auction off myself? Let's auction off me for a second. You host it.
Yeah, definitely.
You want to?
Hell yeah.
Sure, that'd be golden. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
a lotto.
Talking. Yeah.
I mean, I'm available, especially virtually.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Right? Now we're talking. Yeah.
And y'all come up with a date and have people bid on it, and I'll do it for sure.
Right, yeah, for sure. Good. But they didn't want to do it. I think
that's the way
it's on
to
Sunday
do it.
This year,
that's
right?
The way to do it.
Is it on a Sunday?
Yeah.
Yes, one just through Monday.
On a Sunday, I did a Valentine's show. No, like I'm not. No, I don't. We still should do it either Monday or like that next.
Yeah, Monday.
Following Monday.
Do it Monday.
Yeah, I want to do it different. Though. Sure. We should do it like suitors and stuff.
You can even donate to Gary yourself the second day, man.
Yeah, I just need at least 3 girls to show up and bid. That's all. Doesn't matter who you are. Because if 3 girls don't show up, then my self-esteem is going to go to shit. For sure.
No. It'll be crazy. Now that you're doing it, yeah, for sure. No, it'll be good.
Yeah,
last time I was talking, people like, who's the nice dog? Who's this guy? No way. I'm not betting for this guy.
But dude, I pimped you out, though, man. I totally pimped you out.
No, it was good. It was fun. This is the real deal.
We had flyers. You were looking all fly. There were girls that just didn't wake up in time to bid. They were all crying about it and stuff. I'm not playing. You know, I'm not playing.
Like, well, I'm still available, ladies. You know, I'm still around. If you want, inbox me. Night Stalker on Discord if you want.
That's right. Yeah, but no. Like, I think we should do that. We should do something fun. It was fun last year. We'll do it again. No problems. Right?
What are the What are the big British dating shows? Ron.
Oh, I don't know.
They try to parody that. Like, what's the Bachelor of the UK?
A Bachelor of the UK?
Oh, this is a blind date, isn't there? You want blind date?
Oh, blind date.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Blind date with Cilla Black. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's good. Brilliant. She's the voiceover guy as well. It's Michael. Yeah.
If we can get 3 girls in advance, though, then we can do some kind of like dating game thing where you ask the questions, you know, you can kind of interview them, you know. So, if ladies, if you're interested,
yeah,
volunteer now. We got a few days until Monday.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Oh man, I'm learning some hard lessons right now in my life, man. I gotta tell you, look, I'll just say this: there's been a few times in my life where people have, we're about to be in the, it's the 11th. So we're definitely about to be in this Aquarius energy. This energy we need to tap into. And it's all about like self-love, self-appreciation. And when I say self-love, I'm talking about loving everything about yourself, the good, the bad, the ugly, the unique, all of it. And then like, I would use this energy right now, invoke it into you and like worship yourself just a little bit. In a weird kind of way, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, make a comic book hero out of the Night Stalker.
At the minute as well, I think. Got to nurture yourself after a traumatic year.
Yeah, dude, it's been... It's been a lot of stress and a lot of trauma and a lot of crazy stuff, man. It's been going on, you know? And everybody that's worked doing friend stuff has worked really hard. Just I guess some people don't feel appreciated for what they do. I don't know. But It's just like in Patreon, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was talking to you the other night about that Patreon guy that was trying to say I should say this and I should say that. So there's this, and this is a random thing that keeps coming up in my life. These people, like, they come along and then they act like they're your best friend ever. They help you. And then if you don't do what they want, how they want, when they want, say what they want, whatever, then you're unappreciative or not just unappreciative. You're a bad person that is unbiblical. Yeah. I'm unbiblical.
I can't stand that. There should be no strings attached when it comes to friendship.
You've got an agenda.
Like, yeah, well, you shouldn't need anything in return. You know, honestly, that's kind of scarred me in relationships. Like for me, I feel like I'm not reaching out as much as I used to when I was younger. Like
I'm with you
because
dude.
Of that. Like, yeah, it's tough. People do that. That's not right.
That scarred you in relationships, really?
Kind of. Yeah, it makes me question. Like, what do I have to offer?
It's not,
if I feel bad about myself, and then I go more inward, you know, like I'm afraid of that rejection. You know, like I'm afraid of somebody like, cutting me off like that, you know, or
well,
like,
I gotta
hurting
tell
me like
you,
that.
You should be.
Yeah, no, I feel you, brother.
It's a valid fear, man. You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So what are you saying, Rohan?
Do you know what? No, Nightstalker, I've done that for so long, for so much of my life. I was just saying, I've done that exactly what you just said, Nightstalker, for so much of my life. But there comes a point with it for me. There comes a point where you just have to start saying no, and then practicing saying no, and practicing saying it hard, and then practicing not saying it too hard. And then before you know it, you've just really straight and firm with everything. It's like a balancing act, isn't it? But it's took me ages to get there. And what you were saying earlier about that is that resilience. I think the thing is, like, the more you need pressure in life.
Well,
to build muscles without pressure.
You can only give
the first ever universe was all
everything
was dead positive.
And people so much.
Did, nobody did anything. I bet everyone just sat there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think some people want to feel appreciated, and it's going to bring out like a lot of insecurities about it too. I think some people want to feel, I don't know, like they want to feel like, hey, I'm unique, I'm special, and I want to be recognized for it. And if you don't have that in your life, you know, or if you, especially if you didn't have it as a child, which I think most of us didn't, right? Love usually comes with conditions and stuff. Then it, you know, that stuff never goes away. And then if you find
yourself, I get it. I mean, I totally get it. Like, if I'm being completely honest, when all these new shows started, there was a little piece of me that was like, oh wow, like, what about me? You know what I mean, what about the Nice Talk?
Yeah, right.
Know? But then, you know, and it's just for a second, and then I'm thinking, all that does to me, what that emotion exists for is for me to like have that thought and be like, well, what steps do I need to take in order to get what's making me feel that way? You know,
exactly.
It leads to an inner introspection that I think some people need to do too.
Yeah.
Some other people need to do.
Well, I hope we're going to talk a little bit about learning. I think sacred knowledge is important, right? To learn about this stuff. And Jonathan Quinton's going to be coming on. We're going to talk about sacred geometry, you know?
Nice. That's awesome.
It's like, I think this is everything, honestly. Sacred geometry, numbers, like it's the ancient wisdom besides hermetics or whatever too, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So here we go. Like, we're going to have to go to a break. But I want you guys to stay with me. If you do want to support the show, you can go to lightningdevoid.com.
You got your buddies with you.
Make sure you go click on the Patreon banner. Click on donate if you want to donate, for sure. And then if you want to get something like Night Stalker's wearing right now, like a little Suave hoodie with the LTV logo on my son designed, that's the top seller right now. You go grab you one of those.
The quality, too. I wear it every day, and it's lasted me a long time. I wash it every day. It's not fading or anything. It's good.
It's high quality. It's a high-quality hoodie. All right? So we'll be right back with Jonathan Quinton, also our co-host tonight, Rohan and the Night Stalker. Stay with us. More Lighting the Void coming up. Lighting the Void. I'm your host, Joe Roop. That was weird. And we're here with our guest, Jonathan Quinton. Also tonight, we're going to have our co-host with us, Night Stalker, and Rohan is here with us. Two of my favorite people on the planet here. So we're going to get into some talking about Sager geometry. And the main things I really wanted to discuss with our guest coming up is, there really an order to the universe, right? And like, how do our thoughts fit together with the observable or the observable world? And it, and sacred geometry is something I've really been interested in. I think all of us are. And so he's here with us too. And Jonathan Quinton was born and raised in a rural and rugged landscape of New Zealand. And as a boy, he would often forego the constraints of a day in classrooms in favor of wandering the great outdoors. And the wilderness was his classroom. And we have that quote too, you know, that the teachers are in nature, right? And nature is his teacher. And at the age of 21, he began his epic journeys around the world. And over the years, he traveled through dozens of countries, absorbing as much of the culture in each one as he could. And a common theme he noticed weaving its way through the symbology, religion, science, and philosophy, and all of the traditions, was the presence of classical geometry, from the pagodas of Asia to the pyramids of Egypt and to the temples of Greece. The same geometric principles were applied to great structures and art that reflected the harmonic properties of the natural phenomenon and our natural world. So I can go on and on. I'd rather just talk to you about this. I'm so fascinated with this. By the way, the website too, you can go to friendsoffreedom.com, and there's a section in there that's friends, and then Jonathan Q. And I'm going to put this link in the chat room. Also, he has a course at Nassim Harriman's website too, on resonancescience.org. You can look up his name there, and a YouTube channel too, of course. So you can do that as well. But really, yeah, man, thanks for coming on the show. Can't wait to talk to you.
Hey, my pleasure. Yeah, nice to be here.
I'm looking at your site on friendsoffreedom.com, and what do you think, just in your opinion, before we get into your story here, what is there really, like, that's my biggest question. Everything seems so random, and the world seems chaotic, and everything just seems like it's just chaos, right? But is there, based on your research and studies, is there really coincidence? Is everything happening in a natural and orderly way?
On some levels, yes. On the archetypal levels, absolutely. And I'm going to provide tangible evidence of that that can be found in any point of space, any and every point of space, no matter how small, no matter how big, the same mathematical principles apply, the same order can be found. And this order exists in a state of potential in the form of mathematical principles. And it's found manifest in nature in the form of shapes and patterns and forms and chambers that are all representative and based upon certain set of laws, mathematical principles, which are portrayed through geometry. And every shape in geometry is actually a mathematical program. It is just every chamber meaning how many times has the circle been divided. For example, a circle, which is considered the master symbol in sacred geometry, is raw potential, undifferentiated potential, and then reflecting upon itself once gives the center a point of reference and a parameter. Two gives duality, and also pi, the relationship between the diameter and the circumference. The circle dividing upon itself into three uniform divisions produces the first most fundamental shape found manifest as the triangle. In this case, in archetypal geometry, we're talking about the perfect triangle, the equilateral triangle. The circle divided by four gives us the square, the quadrilateral system of circular division, the circle divided by 5 gives us the pentagon, the pentangular, decangular system of circular division. And among them, those three shapes, the triangle, square, and pentagon, they contain all the mathematical laws found throughout nature. Each one within them, by virtue of its shape, creates an essence, and there's a dynamic of interangular relationships, vectors, vertices, radials, meridians, perimeters, parameters, ratios, proportions, root powers, truncations, trajectories, fractalization, to mention a few. And what it's all about is the relationship that exists between these shapes, these forms, and space, because space reacts differently depending upon which chamber it is enclosed in. And among them, they contain all the laws we find operating in nature, and then the geometries that I'm going to be showing you appear in forms of algorithms, the circle divided into, potentially dividing into, infinite numbers of beautiful, perfect geometric formations, cosmoscapes, as I call them. And there is no end. There's no end. The amount of possibilities of ways to fill the circle perfectly with shapes, perfect shapes, all joined perfectly with other shapes and all aligned to a higher order. It's all there inside every circle ever drawn. And in fact, I have pictures to show you. That's why I especially requested that we can do Zoom so we can share screen and I can give a better explanation of the geometries I'm talking about. So let me know when I can switch to share screen and I can show some of the things that I'm referring to.
Yeah, go ahead. You just keep talking and I'll get that. I'm almost got that set up here on YouTube. I've been working on that, by the way. But another thing too that I wonder is like mandalas, you know, people that use mandalas for meditation or whatever. Yeah. I've never really understood that till like this year, because I always practice scrying with simple shapes, right? Like the tatwas and things like that. But then what I found in like studying mandalas and stuff is that you can literally, like, for some reason, staring at shapes, it literally just starts all these like downloads and epiphanies start happening to you while you're watching everything come together. And even right now, I can't explain it, but in the moment I can. So there has to be some type of something going on there. You know what I mean?
Totally. That's what I've spent the last 40 years in my journey of research and experience and experimentation, and importantly, sharing the information, which is why I'm so delighted to be, you know, in a situation sharing it with others who may be of, you know, like-mindedness. And my goal with sacred geometry is to offer it as a tool to higher, as a gateway, a pathway to higher consciousness, because geometry is the only field of mathematics that simultaneously uses both the left and right hemispheres of the brain simultaneously. And when they are both being used in alignment, like focused on a single object, then there's a synergy can take place, and the mind merges into a state of whole brain consciousness, whole brain awareness. And where they join the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere is the pineal gland, or pineal gland as it's also pronounced. And this is our transceiver to the universe. It's what the energies we receive from the universe and our own frequency that we broadcast out to the universe and interact with the universe and are utilizing when we consciously engage with geometric formations that are gateways and interface a fractal that we can lock into and open up a whole stream of universal knowledge and intelligence and order, and a tangible form for us to see with our own eyes that there is this inherent, all-pervading, omniscient, profound, beautiful order that comes to us in the form of geometries, geometric shapes and patterns that are symbolizing continuous, timeless, universal actions. And each one of them a mathematical program in the fractal that can continue internally towards infinite contraction ad infinitum, or through multiplication and addition can extend out to infinite expansion. At every point of space, it has the ability to do this. Every point of space can contain an entire universe of perfection, of geometric perfection. Size doesn't matter. You know, the scale can change from subatomic to, you know, as far out as you can take it. The scale changes, you know, enormously, but the mathematical principles remain the same on every level of scale. And all of these principles, all of these laws are contained in the geometric shapes and forms of sacred geometry. And so when I can get over to shared screen, I wanted to talk about and show to those that have the ability to see the process of visualization and how visualization is so important, because what's happening, and I'll show you, when you look at something, you don't actually see it. There's a whole process going on. Your brain is a receiver. You're seeing it with your brain. You're not whatever it is you're looking at, you're only seeing reflected light.
Okay.
And that's, yeah, that kind of thing. And so, well,
I made you host on here, and I'm dropping the, if y'all go to Lighting the Void on YouTube, you should be able to see Jonathan right now. And hopefully you can share too on here. There you go.
Yeah, I'll say that. Oh, cool. Okay.
That was incredible, by the way. That was just fascinating.
Yeah.
What you just said. Yeah.
I was trying to, okay. I was listening while I was moving everything around too, and I was thinking, yeah, it's blowing my mind.
Yeah. Term cosmoscape is great. Yeah. Oh, yeah, here we go.
Okay, so we have yet to begin. Okay. So I have different modalities of transporting, of delivering this information, and geometry is a very good one. And if we think of everything as energy, which can be described as vibration, vibration can be described as frequency. Frequency can be measured with number. Numbers can be expressed as shape. And shapes as patterns.
You guys gotta all go and watch this. This is awesome.
Shapes contain patterns through reflecting upon themselves in the circle. Infinite arrangements and arrays of dividing the circle by shapes and patterns. And each time the circle is divided by a triangle or a square or a pentagon, the effect is different. The interplay between the circle and everything that goes on within it, and the shapes and everything that goes on within them, is infinite, or potentially infinite. And then there's numbers. Numbers on their own are only digits. Numbers, the power of numbers is to be found in the relationship that exists among numbers. And so we can have progressions And when they are set to certain mathematical processes, multiplication, addition, division, subtraction, whatever, in certain arrangements, certain relationships, there's an alignment, there's a harmonic, there's something there. You just can't deny its existence because it's science and it's reality. And it can be repeated over and over and proven to be right. But there's something there. There's something there quite profound. Something you can't really touch upon. But this is the most fundamental state of this order that we find in sacred geometry, because numbers are included in sacred geometry. Numbers are the organizing principles, and this is where they begin in their raw numerical form. And we can see that when certain number combinations are applied to certain mathematical procedures, then the result is really something quite extraordinary, quite profound. And no two people will have the same experience, because everyone is going to experience this through their own individual filters and levels of consciousness and understanding. But these are the keys, these are the codes, these are the channels, the openings, the streamlines, the pipelines, the numbers, and the number relationships are ways that we can align ourselves to this order, because every time we look at it, then our mind is engaging with it and connecting to the profound implications that are behind it all. And as I said, our minds are receivers. And so all of this information is being absorbed into our consciousness. Every thought and every image we have has an associative neural pathway in the brain. And so this experience, this visual experience, as you are experiencing it, then all of these new neural pathways are being forged in your brain with this information. And your mind is connected, is now connected, depending upon your focus and your intent and a number of other things, depends upon, will determine, you know, just how strong the, right here where that red arrow is showing, I took out the 8. And when you take out the 8 and you move to the right, the answers previously had a 0 in them. And now it's all very perfect. When we take out the 8, that's rather intriguing.
Wow.
Jeez, Louise.
And it starts with numbers, and the numbers are the organizing principle. And the numbers make the shapes, because it's the numbers that make the angles that create the vertices in the circle to produce the shapes and the patterns and all of the other stuff that comes within it, the interangular relationships and vectors and radials and parameters and proportions and all of those things come from these numbers, these organizing principles, these. They're invisible, of course. We don't see these numerals in nature or anywhere. They're principles. They're invisible mathematical principles that Okay, so I wanted to talk about the principle of visualization. And it starts off with what I said. You don't see with your eyes. You see with your mind. Imagine the dream state. In the dream state, the images are identical to the images in your awakened state. And so what you're seeing in your dream state, you can't distinguish from what is in real life And yet your eyes are closed, but you're seeing these images, you're experiencing these images. And so what happens with the eye is just a conduit to receive light language from the field, your field of vision, and to bring that information to you through vibration, through neuroelectrical charges. So let's say in your field of vision, there's a bluebird. And you think, oh, I can see a bluebird, but you can't. For one thing, it's 99.999% space when we reduce it to the molecular and atomic level. And for other, the other thing is it doesn't work that way. You don't see this individual creature beating heart and breathing oxygen and all of these things. You don't see that. You see a reflection of it from a source of light that projects upon it, it reaches the density of it and bounces off it. But this time, the reflected light is carrying within it information about the bird, about its shape, about its form, about its color, about motion, about everything about it visually. This reflected light passes through the pupil of the eye, through the iris, and reflected onto the lens, and the image of it is inverted through the lens. That's what lenses do, they invert things, and cast upon the back of the eye, the retina, which is a membrane containing millions of light-sensitive nerve endings in the shape of rods and cones. And they respond to this reflected light by convulsing. And as traveling upon the optical nerve as neuroelectric charges, they pass through the occipital lobe and into through the geniculate lobe and onto the occipital lobe at the back, where the image is reconstituted, where from the binary code it received from the charges, it is reconstituted and provides an image identical to the image that it is in its field of vision. Now, the reason I went through all of this explanation is you don't see with your eyes, but what's happening is your mind is manufacturing a simulation of what you do see. So the point of this exercise was to, okay, then, you're not looking at a bluebird. You're looking at geometry. You're looking at sacred geometry. Geometry that are, well, the mathematical programs, but they're also archetypes, are templates. They contain all levels, all dimensions of natural laws. And so as we look at them, then we are, through our brain, receiving them, our brain simulating them, and in the process of simulating them is applying the same mathematical processes that are required to achieve these geometries, these shapes, these patterns, these forms. Everything we look at, we simulate in our mind. And we look, if we look at the macabre, the star tetrahedron, the macabre, as Drumvalo explains it, is a vehicle of light that surrounds all living forms, including our form. And this is a vehicle that is to our benefit to make as clear as we can in our lives, because we can get much from this. And there's more. But anyway, looking at these geometric formations, that are aligned to states of universal order. You're doing the same thing. You're creating it in your mind, looking at the Sri Yantra. Or focus and attention, you create a Sri Yantra in your consciousness so that it's reverberating through your cranium and through your whole field of consciousness. In the flower of life, the same thing. So it comes down, everything can be reduced to the circle because it all comes from the circle. The circle is the cosmic womb, source of undifferentiated potential. It represents infinite potential and contains all the laws of nature. So let's start with the basic division of the circle. The first, the lowest number is 3 in order to get a fully enclosed shape, giving us the triangle. The circle divided by 4 is the square, the quadrilateral. The circle divided by 5 is the pentagon. And these are the 3 primary shapes. These are the archetypes that among them contain all of the dynamic principles, the mathematical principles that are contained within them. Each one of them is a fractal that can contain within its chambers an infinite number of geometric formations that are all perfectly connected one to another and surrounding the center of the circle and the triangle and aligned to a higher order. And as you look at it, you are recreating in your mind the same thing, exactly the same thing. This cosmic harmonic receptacle chamber key, a celestial key that can attune our consciousness to the harmony of natural order and universal order, and use both left and right hemispheres simultaneously. And so open up more our pineal gland and allow us to more freely accept the celestial rays and also to connect with this order, because this order is everywhere. And this order, as profound as it is, exists in a state of potential. And that's all it can do unless there is something else to bring it, something that it doesn't have. And that is the observer. Because the observer gives it existence. It didn't have existence otherwise, other than in potential, pre-manifest. Yet, once it's, you know, the focus of someone's potential, then there's a two-way thing that goes on, streaming that goes on. First of all, it filters through our consciousness, and it fills our consciousness. It plants the seeds of these archetypes, of these universal principles, and this resonance and alignment to natural order. At the same time, it has an existence in our consciousness. We are holding it in our consciousness. And so there's a synthesis of self and non-self, of self and the unified field. The unified field reduced in this instance to the circle, been divided in a certain way. The circle divided into the square, the quadrilateral and octagonal and dodecahedral system of circular division gives us a whole different geometric system. And when we include the element of motion, then it gives us a perspective that we wouldn't otherwise get. If we were just talking about it or drawing it or something, then we see so many other attributes about it. And of course, there's just no limit to the number. It can be number of times it can be subdivided and reduced to reflect itself, to continue the same pattern within it infinitely. And remember again that as you see these beautiful formations, you're attuning your consciousness, brain entrainment and adaptation and opening up to it. And it's being presented to us through geometry, sacred geometry, which is the only medium through which we can experience this order. And it all comes from the circle and dividing the circle. And when it's divided five times by the pentagon, then it has the most diversity than any of the other primary shapes, the other two primary shapes. It's the most versatile. And the form that naturally arises as an archetype and representative of the pentagon is the five-pointed star, the pentagram star, which is an embodiment of the golden ratio, which is a whole other thing. Well, actually, everything we've been looking at is golden ratio related. It's the golden thread that weaves its way through the tapestry of creation, uniting diverse and contrasting elements into a harmonic whole through geometry. Geometry can bring all of these shapes and the shapes in between the shapes and so many other things. Well, everything is geometry. This order, this geometric order that we're seeing right now, has existed since before creation. Now, that may be a bold statement, but if we think about it, the universe itself, nature itself, is geometrically ordered and presented. And so there was a geometry was there already, and then it was made manifest through nature geometrically. And we're looking at a timeless part of it that represents these continuous, timeless, universal actions that are shown to us through relationships that we can see and experience as assimilation and balance and division and truncation and fractalization and equilibrium and harmony and interconnectivity and optimization, sustainability, symbiosis, symmetry, synergy, transformation, unity, to mention just a few things that it's representing and can teach us. And it's natural. It's as natural as the seashells and the pine cones and the sunflowers and every other way that nature is made manifest, with the exception that this is pre-manifest. It requires, first of all, the geometer to bring it forward, and then the observer to experience it and to engage with it and have the principles, the mathematical principles that are aligned to this order, to have it there in front of our eyes and recreating it in our occipital lobe, and it being forging these neural pathways into our brain, helping to bring about brain entrainment so that our consciousness can resonate better with this natural order. And what it has a tendency to do, and I'm speaking from my own experience, and which has been a long time, a few decades now, and it helps to bring into order that which is out of order. Because our biggest problem facing us is we have lost our way, our connection to nature, our harmonious symbiotic relationship with nature. We've lost our way since the Industrial Revolution, and now it's time to pay the piper. And geometry is a way that can help to navigate us through this time. It can give us like our own eye of the storm at the center, the calm at the center. And so that no matter what goes on, it allows us to more harmoniously navigate our way through the quandrum, the quagmire that seems to be in place right now. And this is timeless. This is something that they were aware of many centuries ago. And here's another expression. Here's another way I've expressed these geometries. This is what I'm showing you. This is mostly, I think it might even be all of it, is the golden ratio. It's all the circle divided by the pentagon and the decagon, which is the pentagon reflecting over itself and upright. Pentagon combined with an inverted pentagon, and then the radials and the vectors and the meridians and perimeters that develop from this, and the root powers. This is what unfolds if you use the right angles. If you follow the angles as pathways, as I did before, long before the time of computers, I started decades ago with a compass and a ruler, basically. And it all led to this, just from trial and error and tuning to the archetypes, and maybe being struck in the head between the eyes by a rock, it may have affected it in some way as well. I say satirically. these are celestial gateways that are available for us to calm our consciousness. And I thought I'd just end here with this visualization, because I know not everyone's seen the shapes and patterns that we are. Here we have the Sri Yantra, which is made of 9 primary shapes that make 43 smaller shapes, all of them containing golden ratio properties. And here I show how those 43 triangles are morphed to 43 circles to create the flower of life. And then just a few more examples of the circle being divided by the quadrilateral, the hexagonal, whatever different system of circular division, to create its own state of order, its own geometric system made of squares and triangles and hexagons and pentagons and decagons and decagrams and all those things. And so that was a little visual show I thought I'd give you
tonight. Oh man, that was incredible. Oh man. Beautiful.
Oh, thanks. That
was really, really cool. I've so many things to say. I'm backing up.
Yeah.
Well, this is like, so we...
You can tell when someone's got a grasp on something, you know?
Yeah, well, we talk about this. I talked about this with, and I want to ask you your opinions on this too, like when it comes to, let me switch the view here to gallery view. So when it comes to like, magic, when magicians make the circle, when they start like ceremonial magicians, which, you know, of course there's a lot of stuff like Aleister Crowley, and a lot of people have given ritual magic a bad name, but literally they use sacred geometry and these archetypes that you're talking about, like they'll make a circle around and do some type of invocation and prayer to God, which is like you're calling infinite potential, you know. Use the pentagrams. They literally draw with their finger or a dagger and invoke a vibration with their mouth to work with the elements. Then they use hexagrams to work with the planets, right? And they use a lot of visualization and a lot of emotion and things like that that relate to the subconscious. So it's like they're calling upon these archetypes, in a sense, to help them or
exactly, precisely. Yeah. And, you know, along my pathway, I experimented with different factions, and that line, that field of exploration. And it was like too much of their personal philosophy got caught up in the interpretation.
Gotcha.
Of, you know, the archetypes, and I wanted to do it sans, you know, interpretation, and just down to its mathematical constituents, and let everyone make their own choice as to, you know, what it is, what it means to them. No two people are going to have the same experience of looking at a mandala, a geometric formation, because it's all going to be, it all has to pass through these filters that have been in place since, you know, prenatal, and since the time of conception, and every genetics and indoctrination, all of those things, all of those filters, but also compared to the consciousness of the viewer. Like it could be an infant, a youngster, you know, it already have the consciousness to engage with these geometries. I've been teaching it for many decades, and my favorite audience is children, the preschool level children, because I would create three D forms in the form of the five Platonic solids and their different combinations, the 13 Archimedean solids, and show it to these children, and they would gravitate to it like, you know, a duck to water. They converge towards these geometries. They have this natural affinity, this natural attunement to these geometries. And I would teach you all the grades from preschool to primary school, and I think you call middle college, and high school, and college, university, to mathematical conventions. And I should note here, in terms, I should give my mathematical credentials here. I expect you'll be quite impressed. I never finished high school. I never passed a mathematical test in high school. I went through my whole school period undiagnosed dyslexia and Asperger's and attention deficit and OCD and etc. And you know, I just sat at the back of the class and tried to act as invisible as possible and watch the clock hands pass by. But fortunately, fortunately for me, we lived in a rural area, and not far from the schoolyard was the pathways to the foothills, going to the Alps, what we call the Southern Alps here. And at every opportunity, I'd slip away from class after roll call, and I'd go wandering through the wilderness. And as you said in my introduction, nature was my teacher, and the wisdom of nature was, you know, what it taught me. And from an early age, I'm talking from at this age, I started about 12 or 13 doing this, to the point where I was spending more time outside of class than inside. The teachers didn't mind, because I was, you know, considered a difficult student. And so I just breezed through school, and I left at the earliest opportunity without any qualifications. And all I had was a grasp of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and took it from there. And so when you, you know, include the elements of dyslexia and what have you, it wasn't any easy matter. But geometry saved me, and I want to promote sacred geometry as a therapeutic tool, because it has helped my dyslexia enormously. I was virtually at the point of almost being dysfunctional. I couldn't do it on my own. And just working with it and utilizing both hemispheres of the brain and working with the angles and the angular relationships and the colors and the spatiality of the five Platonic solids, I started noticing that I could do things that I couldn't do previously.
Like what? What do you mean?
Well, I couldn't read a timetable or, you know, bus timetable or bank statement or anything that required left brain. It was just a jumble for me, and I couldn't make sense of it. And I had to have things pointed out to me. But, you know, with geometry, it engaged my left brain in a non-offending way. I should say, you know, one of my experiences of school was my first mathematical teacher had a foreign accent I couldn't understand, and it got off to a very bad start, a very bad taste of mathematics and very little interest in mathematics, and went downhill from there.
So
I say that
go ahead.
The whole presentation really engaged both sides. Like the way you explained how the sacred geometry engages both sides of your brain, the presentation you created does the same thing. It really got my brain really, really going.
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking the whole time, I wish I would have like just taken a small amount of mushrooms, just a small amount, you know, while listening to this, you know, like just a small little bit, you know, but it was.
Funny you should say that, Joe.
Yeah. Were you thinking the same thing?
And I just...
Because it wasn't just the shapes. It wasn't just the shapes.
Yeah, because you know what?
It's his voice and the way he presents it, too. It's like it puts you in this hypnotic state of learning the whole time, man. It's crazy, you know? Is this what you do on
It's like listening to a different Terrence McKenna voice that someone else that talks about it.
That's exactly what it sounded like. But is this what you do on Nassim's website? Do you do these presentations?
Well, you know, Nassim and I have given presented together. I mean, I'm a lead up act to him. He's the star of the show, and we've given speaking tours in Australia and Hawaii, and California. We've you know, spoken quite a few times together, and he's a very dear friend of mine. I love him so much.
People are asking me in chat too, Jonathan, about how they can. They're asking me about rewatching the show on YouTube, but they're also asking me where they can find any of your coursework and stuff like that, where you do stuff like this.
Yeah, what I showed can be found, or very similar to it, at the course I give at Nassim's online course. Okay. It's you know, whatever it is, resonance. science.org/Jonathan Quinton.
Yeah, that's
like
it.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will post the YouTube video shortly too, because everybody, you have that addictive quality of teaching, man. Like this is definitely what you're meant to do for sure. There's no doubt about it, right? I mean, no doubt about it. Like so, and speaking of that, at what point while you were studying this stuff, did you like when did that happen in your life where you're like, I have to teach this. I have to show this to people.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can give you almost the exact date. It was in 1986. I was living in Jerusalem, and I was attending a seminar, the forum, an American seminar in Tel Aviv. And one of the questions, by this time I'd been working for 5 years of the United Nations in the Middle East. And at the seminar, the facilitator posed a question: what are you most passionate about? And the whole reason I was in the Middle East was so I could visit all the sites, the sacred sites and the pyramids and the temples and the synagogues and all of that. I was there, and here I was at the seminar, and he says, what are you most passionate about? Sacred geometry. And he says, and what is stopping you from pursuing your passion full time? And I thought, oh, nothing. And the next day I resigned from, I handed in my notice at the United Nations. It was 1986. That was the last time I had a paycheck. And since that time, I've devoted my life to the exploration and experience and experimentation and sharing, importantly sharing this information, because I think, you know, this provides this doesn't conflict with religion or, you know, personal philosophy or psychology. This is mathematics. This is science. And Hindus can do it, and Muslims can do it, and Catholics, and, you know, anyone can do it. Every organized religion includes sacred geometry, they don't call it that, in their tradition. You know, it appears in many different forms and symbolism, and most importantly, architecture, so that it's still to this day existing, showing that the elders who are the architects of these ancient amazing architectural achievements, they saw this order in nature. They saw the archetypes, they saw the principles, root 2, root 3, root 5, the golden ratio, the golden number 1.618, all of this. And they applied it to their architecture, as did the Aztecs and the Greeks and you know,
really Americans too in Washington D.C. and everything, yeah. The architecture of D.C.
They tuned into these archetypes and they wanted to work in alliance with this natural order. And so my life, that this has been my life since 1986. I'm now in my mid 60s, and I think I was 32 or 33 when I started this, and I was already, you know, involved in it. I've been involved in it since I was a child, and through the fascination and mesmerizing impact of nature, of flowers and seashells and pine cones and what have you. And it's just continued from there. And it just got to the point of that seminar in Tel Aviv where I thought, well, I know what I want to do. I've always wanted to do this. I never thought I could just do it. And I'm going to anyway. And I did. And here I am years later and just showing you an example of where it's come to in that amazing time.
So why don't we learn about this when we're kids? Like you said, the preschoolers really engage with it well. And like I did fairly well in math as a kid, and I didn't hear about this until well into college, until I found it on my own. So like, why don't we learn this?
Well, don't feel too bad about it, because as I mentioned, I even presented at mathematicians' conferences, and I did one in Asilomar, Monterey, to a whole congregation of mathematicians. And after the show, a retired professor of mathematics came up to me with tears in his eyes and said he almost wished he hadn't seen it, because it showed him what he could have done with his life.
Wow. Crazy. Yeah.
So, you didn't see it in the schools, because that's not what schools were designed for. The schools were designed to train you for work positions. Yeah. Industrial Revolution, that's when the school started, and it was to train workers in their vocation so that they could keep the wheels turning. And that's what the schools are structured for, to create workers. And, you know, sacred geometry and the Platonic solids and all of that, you know, they looked at it, if at all, quantitatively. And of course, for it to be holistic, you need to look at it qualitatively as well. And that's what it is the experience of a multidimensional.
Can I just make a point, Jonathan?
Sure, yeah. Go.
You know that about, well, education specifically, I try and dodge that higher education stuff, although you need the paperwork. But I went to university, studied psychotherapy, because it's a different way to get in, sort of thing. And they literally said, when I was saying these kinds of things, it says, we don't teach academics. None of the colleges, universities, they don't teach academics. We teach attitudes. That's what it said to me. That's admitted it, because they're in counseling, so they can be honest, can't they? Yeah, they teach attitudes. And I was also, I've got a few comments to make, but I'll see what you think about that. But I wondered if you've been studying this for so long, have you come across the work of Marco Rodin and his Vortex Mathematics and the Rodin Coil at all?
Oh, everyone does. Yeah. Brilliant work and inspirational. And I don't go too far with it because I don't have the... I just like to stick to my own stuff. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Sure, so. I just wondered if it relates because it's got the geometry and the mathematics.
Oh,
it all relates.
It all relates, you know, one way or another. It all relates. It's all archetypes. It all comes from source. And so source, unilaterally, you know, is represented by the circle two-dimensionally and the sphere three-dimensionally. And each one reflecting upon itself, dividing itself in uniform divisions, two and three dimensionally, making the shapes and the forms.
So are we basically saying it's the plutonic solids are like the framework upon which reality is placed, and they're just the basic elements, sort of thing.
Is that why the magic sits on the plutonic solids,
and that's why we're getting expressed?
Yeah, the Platonic solids have been around. Yeah. They are a really ancient, well, historic representation can be found in the Oxford Museum there, where five Platonic solids found, carved out of stone, and relating back to Neolithic times, they were in tune with this. And then ancient Egypt, of course, showed that they were aware of this. And the ancient Hindus referred to the five Platonic solids as the crystallization of the thought forms of God, because they are mathematical programs and they have among them all of the principles, you know, with their interangular relationships and what have you. Then these are found out in nature, applied through the self-organizing forces of nature that bring matter and force together into a state of manifestation. And molecules, you know, and chemicals, it's found on every level, from the subatomic to macrocosm. And the same principles apply. Scale changes extremely, but the same root 2, root 3, root 5, golden ratio, pi, phi. It all reduces to just a handful of basic principles.
So you mentioned how it helped you to tap into to the left side of your brain. Like, is that the benefit that you'll get, that all of us will get from meditating or from focusing on these shapes?
Well, most of us are left brain dominant. Yeah. You know, in Western society, the training, the indoctrination has made us really left brain dominant. I'm the exception because we're all kind of strange.
In a good way, though. Yeah.
But what it does is it does it in attunement with nature. What we're taught in our education system and in our Western society is that, you know, nature is a commodity. It's resources that we can use, you know, for capitalism and for development and progression and evolution. And so it looks at things, you know, in a quantitative manner. And sacred geometry, it is quantitative as well. I mean, in regular geometry that you learnt in school, you use triangles and squares and pentagons and those things. But the teacher, basically, his or her limit of experience is where they were just measuring, you know, for measuring devices or defining, you know, shapes in that. They had no concept, most of them, of what they actually are, that they contain within them a universe of possibilities.
I hate to cut this short, but I already skipped a one break. I have to take a sponsor break here.
Not at all.
Yeah, but I didn't mind skipping the presentation. Like, that's fine. But I kind of have to take one. But
not
I'll make
all,
it quick here.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm gonna take this break, guys. We'll be right back. More with Jonathan Quinton coming up. It's fascinating stuff. Stay with us.
Okay, I'm gonna take a bathroom break.
All right.
Yeah, same.
Lighting the Void. Sorry, it's the first time I've really done like a video and audio this way. I think I'm doing pretty good though, right off the bat. Man, I might do this more. Just your presentation, Jonathan, alone might actually trigger me to do more video shows, because that was amazing.
Yeah, this is great. This is so cool. Yeah,
it was amazing.
Cool. You know, I used to make my livelihood by international speaking tours. But that meant, you know, airplanes and customs offices and immigration hotels and blah, blah, blah. This is way easier, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's easier when you tap into your talent, but your soul mission, because you're definitely doing your soul mission, right? Like, and when I think when people just go for that, everything kind of opens up for them, you know.
What I tell people, you know, is when you're following your path, the universe opens doors, and it's been that way right from the beginning for me. Yeah.
Were there any struggles along your way with this, though?
Oh, every step. Every step of the way. No, it's an exaggeration. I remember 3 or 4 steps we were quite okay. Anyway. it's been... You know, everything, but I've experienced some extreme hardship, and also, you know, at the other end of the scale, ultra delight and wonderful places, wonderful sights, wonderful places to stay, wonderful places to live. You know, as long as I stay focused on my work, then the rest of it takes care of itself. And thank goodness, I mean, because I have enough, you know, trouble as it is, knowing what day of the week it is, let alone all the other stuff that goes.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
I have the same issues, really. I think when you're like lost into, when you get so into your work, the outside world, as great as it is, It also, like, it doesn't matter what time it is. You walk in nature, when does that really matter what time it is? The sun matters, where the light matters.
Yeah.
That's about it, you know?
Yeah, we brought the mechanical clock in, you know, in the 15th, 16th century. And that taught us to divide time into uniform divisions, linear divisions of progression. And, you know, the seasons change. And everything in nature changes all the time. The ocean, the tide changes. And these idiots did it, you know, uniformly. You know, every hour was, you know, divided uniformly into 24 segments. And yeah, it really took us off the path, off the course of being in touch, being in attune with nature. And that's what we can do personally, is attune ourselves, not just to nature, but beyond that, the unified field, cosmos, attuned to nature, cosmos. Yeah.
Can you picture a world where everyone has this incorporated into their daily lives? Like, what is that world, that futuristic world look like, where we're all privy to this information and we're using it in our day-to-day life? Like, Is that the secret to free energy and
stuff?
Well,
it's been done. It's been done. The Atlanteans were doing it.
Yeah.
And other civilizations have done that right down to currency and literature and their laws, and that the Greeks. And we do it to varying degrees, but man-made law, pardon the expression, is not separate from natural law, from universal law. It doesn't, you know, take that into account, into accordance, and it throws everything out of sync. Like the clocks, us, you know, and our biorhythms and circadian cycles. And that, like, the Gregorian calendar, the new year is, you know, when the Earth's orbit is in the Capricorn or 25, it's in Capricorn. But it's got nothing to do, it has no relationship with the Earth's relationship to the sun. The Earth's relationship of its rotation around the sun begins on the 21st of March, which is 0 degrees Aries. Yeah. And, you know, it makes its rotation around the sun over a 12-month period. And that's the real calendar, that's real time. Yeah. And the moon cycles are the real time. The Gregorian stuff was made for diplomatic reasons, for human activities and that kind of thing. And it really, that along with the clock, and plus the Industrial Revolution, is what took us away from, you know, where we lost our way. And we look to Earth as a resource to be plundered, you know, without end. And we totally lost our connection to the harmony and the symbiosis of natural order.
I think that's where we lost our way in a lot of ways. The second we came over to this country and started trying to own nature and possess things and things like that, when we're talking about powers that can't be possessed, I don't think, you know.
No, and can't be owned. Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it just shows how naive human nature can be to think that, you know, they can actually own the land. I mean, they're just a blink of time of, you know, eternity, but gone in an instant.
Yeah.
And right. In that instant, for them to think that they have ownership is, you know, quite naive. But, you know,
you can't take the stuff with you, right? Like, you can't take anything.
You can't take it with you. Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. You can only experience it in that time, in the present.
I wonder, I feel like, though, and I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but I have studied the Western ceremonial traditions, Hermetic Kabbalah, sacred geometry, theosophy, a lot of the same stuff I'm sure you've looked at too at some point in time, right? And
yeah,
when you see monuments, like even in our country, where they, if you look on the Tree of Life, well, the Pillar of, you know, the Sephirah of Severity is they actually draw the shape of the pentagon or the, you know, the pentacle there, right? And they use the Martian, or they correspond it to Mars too, but for some weird reason. But then you see our government use that with the building of war. They just make their whole building into that archetype, right? It's like,
it's consciousness and intention. And, you know, that's why the pentagram has such a bad name. You know, it's been demonized for centuries. Mm. Yet it's one of the most sacred shapes. You know, there could be, it's just a total embodiment of the golden ratio. Every part of it divides into the golden ratio. and it's made of the golden ratio. And yet, you know, the ignorant fear of it is, I've had, you know, I'd show talks around town and that, and some of my art, a lot of my art included pentagrams, and there have been places where they were taken down because, you know, the religious people took offense to pentagrams being in their environment because it was the mark of Satan. And this was a Christian community.
Yeah. Religious gaslighting. Right? Like you're just trying to do your thing, man, and they're telling you you're the evil guy, right? Like, you're the evil guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you're trying to unlock people's potential, right? And trying to unlock awareness, and you're the evil guy.
Haven't you read the Bible? You know, you shall not, you know, whatever, the tree of knowledge.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, and I was raised in the Irish Catholic family.
Oh boy.
Convent and, you know, nuns and leather strap and, you know. Oh, man.
Did you get swatted? Jeez. Did they swat you like that too? I know.
Well, as a 5-year-old, I got the 6 of the best of the leather strap for talking in class.
Oh man. Yeah.
By a dysfunctional Irish nun.
Yeah.
So what did they think when you were running off to the woods to nature to go?
Oh,
to
go, I know. By that time, I'd gone beyond the, you know, the church education, and I was in the secular one, and you know, I did it very discreetly, and they were relieved to tell you the truth. They were relieved. Yeah. As long as my name was signed, you know, on the enrollment
form, yeah, exactly.
Presence, and that's what I did,
I've honestly have really tried really hard, Jonathan, to talk to people about magic, mysticism, sacred geometry. It just has such a negative connotation to some of it, but sacred geometry, numbers, that doesn't have and should never have in any form or fashion a negative connotation to it, if you ask me. I mean, even in science, they're constantly, you know, finding the truth about, you know, fractals and everything, and right, like what's really going on. So you got to kind of feel a little bit validated about what you're doing, you know. But quantum physics, to me, it's like, I feel like science is out finding chaos, or trying to find small things in chaos, when we have like guys like you and Nassim and other people doing work where they're showing you that it's not exactly chaos, right? It's all order, you know. It's all order. So I guess one of the biggest questions I wanted to ask you, and something I've always wondered about, was the Merkaba, which I think is the key to, I guess I'll come out with it, the body or whatever that we're supposed to develop, right? Because I've been told that true alchemy isn't just turning lead into gold with physical things, or psychologically, or even spiritually, that it's an actual like energetic transformation that a person goes through, where we could travel through starlight, right? Mm. I think we've all been kind of told this, right? But what do you know about that? I mean, there's an intuitive knowing for sure, right? But what have you discovered about that?
Okay, well, intuitively, which is different from, you know, being able to back it up with any kind of evidence. First of all, I've followed the work of John Barlow since the 80s.
Yeah.
And you know, he's very strong on the Merkaba and teaches or taught back then in the 80s, 90s, that it, you know, it's the field of the star tetrahedron, two interlocking tetrahedra, two interlocking three-dimensional pyramids, and that, you know, it can be, we can use it as our vehicle of light for time travel, for interdimensional time travel, where we're not restricted by the present, but because we are everything, and any one moment we are everything, we contain all information, have done so since the point of conception, because we are a fractal of the universe, just like the triangles and the squares and the pentagons I showed, had all these different ways, infinite different ways of, you know, filling these shapes with all of these different formations, all perfectly ordered and aligned to this order. You know, actually, I lost track of what we was going with that. What direction was I taking?
I was talking about what we could figure out about the Merkaba. There's an intuition that knows that it's the next form of light travel or body travel or whatever. Yeah. But trying to physically prove that is another thing.
It's duality. Well, you know, it represents duality because it's the integration of the upright and the inverted tetrahedron, which is the most fundamental division, uniform division of space, that a shape can be carved. If we think, you know, of a sphere, think of it as a sphere of butter, of soft butter, and we have theoretically a knife that is heated and calibrated so that we can cut it at any angle we want, then the first form we could create, we could sculpt from a sphere of butter, and if we did that, would be with the least amount of strokes is the tetrahedron, and that takes four strokes. In four strokes, we can create a form, which is a tetrahedron. Then it takes six strokes of the sphere, six uniform strokes of the sphere, creates the cube, the hexahedron. Eight strokes of the sphere creates the octahedron. And 10 strokes creates the dodecahedron. By this time, we're dividing the sphere into five faced, you know, polygons, polyhedra. And finally, 12 divisions, 12 strokes of the knife, of this calibrated, heated knife through the butter, creates the icosahedron. Forms the five platonic solids, which is a sphere divided five ways uniformly, least amount of strokes, same edges, same length, same angles, faces, etc. There's only five of them can do this. That's the five platonic solids. From them, through further divisions and truncations of them, we get the 13 Archimedean solids. And they are divisions and truncations and extrapolations of the five platonic solids, which make 13 further harmonic archetypal geometric forms.
Yeah. Man, wow. There is so much I want to ask you, man. Like, there's so,
so
much.
Great.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Good.
There's so incredible. Much I want to talk to you about, but like, we're at the end of the show. You got
well, maybe we could have another one sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be great. We should do this. Yeah.
Yeah, we should do it again for sure. Because I'm gonna have to go back and watch this myself, and then like write down some questions for sure. You know?
Yeah. Well, I've got lots more. I got tons more.
So. He's got a lot of more. That's great. Because I've got people messaging me already, like talking about you got to have the guy back and all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I was thinking that too. So. But before we get out of here, can you please, by all means, since you spent this time with us, like share your where everybody can find you, you know, your YouTube channel. You can look up Jonathan Quinton too. That's Quintin, right?
Oh, so best way to reach me is my name, Jonathan Quinton, spelled, if you can understand my accent, I hope. JonathanQuintin @gmail.com, and that's my direct mail if someone wants to reach me. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been awesome having you here. And I mean, for me and Nightstalker Rohan, we might hang out after the show a little bit, but I got to switch over to The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable. And yeah, this is one of those shows I've done. I don't know. It's either 600 or 800. I don't know how many shows I've done, honestly, somewhere around there. Right. And this is going to be one of those like to remember for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
Well, I really enjoyed it, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, we enjoyed it too. And if you're listening live, up next is The Secret Teachings with Ryan Gable, guys. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night. Yeah.